is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The President of the United States, a critical embassy to the Middle East, including Israel, of course, but the Kingdom, the Gulf, the threat of Iran. Malcolm Holmlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, joins me to preview the President's embassy, what to watch for, and there are surprising developments already in train. Malcolm, a good evening to you. The Kingdom is getting all the attention because of the disorder in the Kingdom and the friction between the Biden administration and MBS. However, the president is also going to Israel and other important countries. What should we watch for? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And indeed, your point is something very right, that it be advanced work being done now by within the region with the United States and without the United States is truly remarkable. There are literally every hour new announcements and revelations in part coming up about the preparations, the cooperation, the anticipation of the visit. Certainly in Israel, it's widely anticipated, now coming in the middle of what could be an election. And the improved Saudi relationships with the U.S., which is intended also, I think, to improve relationships with Israel and Saudi Arabia, wants full relations, according to many reports. It will take time, certainly with the current king in office, it's unlikely to happen. But we see the social media posts increasing, those that are favoring relationships with Israel, the military threat from Iran, drawing them together, and the desire for trade, and mostly for technology, and especially for Neom, the new city that that Salman is championing and will be an amazing development. The King of Jordan endorsed a Middle East military alliance. He didn't mention Israel per se, but clearly that would it would be included. He talked about a Middle East NATO, and he compared it to that and saying that he would be the first to endorse this kind of a move. And then we're seeing other negotiations that are going on and revelations from different parties about the vast number of contacts that are taking place between Israel and the Arab states, beyond the Abraham Accord states, but primarily involving them. One of the revelations, John, was about an unprecedented meeting of Arab states about the Iranian threat with Israel present under the auspices of the U.S. It was U.S. initiated, and it was top military officials from throughout the region. It was held in Sharm el-Sheikh, and you had Israel, Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, with which Israel doesn't have relations. The UAE and Bahrain sent officers there. And General Frank McKenzie, the head of CENTCOM, the Central Command, represented the U.S. And there were extensive discussions about the fear of Iran that they share, the ties of the Abraham Accords, and the desire to get Israeli technology and arms. But more than that, it's about a coming together, a security coordination that is really quite remarkable. We've seen joint exercises, but here at the high level, they're coming together to exchange intelligence, to have visits of delegations and training in what the Minister of Defense of Israel called the Middle East Defense Alliance, is already operational. And this is going to set a stage for the president's visit that's very important. It's not all hammered out, but I think that the fact that you've had these kind of gatherings, the meetings of the Arab states in Israel that took place in the Negev summit, is going to be replicated now in Bahrain in the coming days, and the UAE, Morocco, Egypt, U.S. going to be meeting in Mount Nara to talk about coordination and cooperation.
So this is Abraham Accords meets the United States. And what is the mission statement, Malcolm? You said a Middle East NATO. Are we talking about unanimity is necessary? And if you attack one of us, you attack all of us. Is that it?
Well, I think that was the term I quoted from the King of Jordan, but I think it certainly says that we have a mutual responsibility, that people are not just going off on their own, because they all face, whether Muslim states, Arab states, the Jewish state, face a threat from Iran. And Iran's increasing aggressiveness, which we will talk about, underscores this. You know, they're going to announce a new missile with a 300-kilometer range. They're talking about other new weapons that they are unveiling in the course of the activities in which they are engaged. And they take great pride in doing it. The head of with the IRGC, the police, the armed forces, you saw Brigadier General Hami talk about how they've overcome the sanctions and the threats, and then saying increasing the missile capacity of the army for deterrence power and protecting national interests. But he's also talking about drones operating at altitudes of 47,000 feet and why they don't care about what goes in the Gulf, because they now have the capacity of technology and other aspects to protect their own borders. And whether this is completely true, there's certainly elements of truth to it. They also are launching again, it looks like, a second satellite. And John, we talked about it before, that they bypass the restrictions on the ballistic missile program by launching what they say are space satellites. But in fact, they only have the harness for the satellite, because that can also carry a nuclear weapon. So this is really advancing their nuclear program at the same time.
The JCPOA, it's off, it's on. I'm beginning to think it's like Dracula, that it sleeps in dirt from Transylvania until it awakens at midnight. Is it back, Malcolm?
It looks like it's coming back to haunt us again. And we know that there was meetings with the U.S. Representative Malley, with Borrell and others in Vienna. And now Borrell went to Tehran in a very apologetic manner. The Iranians are constantly saying, well, we're going to renew talks, but about the sanctions. They don't say it's about the nuclear program. They say they're only ready to talk about the sanctions, which has been their position of resistance till now. And they say that if the Tehran's benefits from the nuclear deal are not guaranteed, it won't be accepted. And they want only to remove the sanctions on Iran. And that's what the talks will be about. Borrell has been anxiously pushing this. He is the foreign policy chief for the European Union. France came out with a statement in the last few days saying they're prepared to come back to the talks. They saying also there's goodwill on the American side. They're preparing the groundwork for a gathering. But if the talk isn't about how you stop Iran from its more aggressive actions and the expansion of its nuclear program, the IAEA issued a report talking about Iran stepping up enrichment at the underground Fordo site and removing the cameras at various sites at Natanz and Fordo, Fordo being a particularly serious place, and the fact that they are introducing cascades of the very advanced centrifuges, which means they can enrich to a higher purity and higher levels and on a sustained basis, meaning that their breakout time constantly shrinks. And they're putting all of this, these sensitive nuclear sites, deep underground, under a mountain. So it's impervious to military strikes, but also to monitoring to a large degree about exactly what is happening there. And the IAEA Board of Governors censured Tehran because they didn't give credible information, as they said, about nuclear material found at the undeclared sites in the country. So we don't know a lot about a lot of places, but we're sitting down. We're going to talk to them about, again, picking up where we left off before. It's a fool's errand in many respects, because the Iranians have not shown any real desire. Their economic conditions are terrible. The demonstrations in the country get worse and worse. They are continuing their expansionist activities. They are, as I said, advancing each aspect of the nuclear program. And at the same time, we're talking about sitting down with them and even making gestures to them, like one about the IRGC.
I've learned that the cameras were removed, correct? They're removed,
yes,
from the
removed
observation.
Right.
The IAEA no longer has any way to monitor anything in Iran. Is that
nothing?
How does it go forward as a JCPOA strengthening if the cameras are gone?
It was a fundamental of the original document of any way that this could be successful, because if we can't monitor and test and see what, because we know they've lied and cheated in the past all the time. And if we don't have the capacity to really monitor them on an ongoing basis, see what goes in, what goes out, then it's a sham. And the IAEA till now has had no access and issued a censure, which is a pretty tough measure by their standards. And the reference I made before to the IRGC is that the United States is introducing at the Department of Homeland Security's initiative, together with state and the Attorney General Garland, to allow former members of the IRGC to come to the United States. to be able to enter the United States, even though they were associated with a foreign terrorist organization. But if they can show they had limited material support to this designated terrorist organization. I mean, we're inviting them into the country. We're going to allow them to be here. This is beyond any outrage. And you saw what they're doing in Turkey, where they went after Israelis, they were killing people, attempted to kill people in Turkey, arrested a bunch of them, detained Iranian agents. We're going to kill a former Israeli ambassador's wife against some Israelis who were in the country. And it was such an embarrassment of the failure that the head of the intelligence unit of the IRGC, who was in charge of this, was fired this week. His name is Taeb.
I want to understand this, Malcolm. The IRGC is sanctioned, correct? It's sanctioned.
Absolutely.
It's sanctioned. Aren't individuals of the IRGC sanctioned along with this? That's the only way it makes sense.
Well, we arrest people who are members of foreign terrorist organizations.
And how do you retire from sanctioning? How do you
retire from a terrorist organization?
Yes,
good question.
And you're getting paid a pension and you're part of the apparatus. This is an elite force. How do you retire from it? And how do you get to be a former terrorist? How does that happen? Does the State Department?
This is something we only learned in the last 24 hours. It is so outrageous. It's hard to believe that it's true. But so far, we've seen no denials or reports that it isn't true. And it could be the concession. You remember the sticking point with the Iranians was that they said the IRGC could not be under sanctions. This may be the gesture then that the U.S. makes to say, well, we're not putting everybody under it. We're allowing all these people can even come to the United States, which means that we're removing the sanctions from them.
Malcolm, when you're a member of the IRGC, you're on a no-fly list, correct? I mean, you're not getting anywhere into the United States unless you're
removed. Well, you saw that the plane that the Argentinians captured from Venezuela and have been holding to now because the pilot was an IRGC guy and involved in bad activities. So if Argentina understands it's because of U.S. sanctions and they're holding the plane already and some of the crew for almost 2 weeks, certainly these people are no better.
All right. Because we can't conquer magical thinking, let us try. Why did the prime minister of Iraq visit Tehran?
He had a meeting with the president, Raisi, in Tehran. He talked about regional stability. It's part of the effort. Iran is really making an all-out push on Iraq and against the United States, against the West. And the Iraqis seem to be moving in that direction. And it raises a lot of concerns in capitals that I've spoken to. I think that this visit, and it's important to note, because it gets too easily overlooked in the course of things. And we see, Iran's aggressiveness on every frontier, including now with Hezbollah, new initiatives.
Oh, I love this one, Malcolm. This is Hezbollah on the northern border of Israel, where you took me my first trip to Israel during the fighting in Bethlehem. I also went to the north. And I saw there is a Hezbollah camp and there is a UN observation camp. Is the UN observation camp still there? And what is it doing about the Hezbollah building observation posts along the same border?
The lazy little villages of the interim force who do nothing. And in fact, Hezbollah is building these 15 new observation posts with towers, look out over Israel's northern frontier, often near military bases, and even on the place where they took a number of Israeli soldiers, and it started the war in 2006. Well, they have over a dozen of these on the border, and there's electronic equipment there. There's other things. And the interim force, the UN interim force, says, oh, no, this is a group, Green Without Borders. They're there for environmental purposes, though they have no environmental activity whatsoever. That's demonstrative. These are manned by Hezbollah 24 hours a day. They each has a tower or two or three residential logistical buildings attached to it as well. And some are just meters from the internationally recognized border, which is called the blue line. And IDF is right opposite it. So this is not something that Israel can tolerate for long. And the fact that the UN forces don't intercede in any way is the answer to your question.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.